As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it's Sean, and I am here to introduce yet another bonus episode of the Real Blend podcast. This time, our interview with Johannes Roberts, the director and writer of Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City. That is a mouthful. So this is a reboot of the Resident Evil franchise, and it is a bit of a throwback to the adaptations of the first two games, definitely getting away from the earlier films in the franchise and really trying to establish itself on its own. And as you're going to see over the course of this interview, Johannes is just an enormous fan of the games and really went to great lengths to make sure that he recreated the worlds and the characters and a lot of the situations from the classic Capcom video games. So if you grew up playing those games, or if you're a rabid fan of those, I think you're really going to find something interesting in the film Welcome to Raccoon City for various reasons. And then also, one of the things we had to get into with him is just the punishing environmental situation that he put himself in, because the entire film takes place at night and in the rain. So he has some amazing stories about trying to put that together. So without further ado, a bonus episode of Real Blend coming at you guys. Johannes Roberts, the writer and director of Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City.
I feel like we're in a Wall Street, like you're going to ask me some business tips.
That's all I've got. I've got nothing but very hard business questions, and so I hope you're prepared for 30 minutes of them.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Johannes, this is the Real Blend podcast. We are a filmmaker-driven podcast, so we want to get as geeky as possible with you, and we really appreciate you taking the time to join us. I have to start here. You're coming off of two 47 meter down movies, which involve tons of water.
Yes.
And then you take on Raccoon City, and rain is an actual character in your movie. Yep, it's relentless, but it's absolutely necessary. And in talking to your cast, they talked about just how wet and cold it was. So I need to know, at what point in this process, when you were firing up the rain machines yet again, did you look around and just think maybe this wasn't the best idea?
Yeah, it was stupid. You know what? It was like, I knew, you know, I was so obsessed with this, the reboot of the second game while we were writing the script. And I just became obsessed. I'm such a big Carpenter fan that I was like, it's Assault Precinct 13. It's going to happen over one night. This is how it's going to be. And I was like, it's got to rain. And people were like, yeah, you realize, like, you're going to be in Sudbury, 4 hours outside Toronto, minus 10. This is all night. I mean, how are you going to do this? And I was like, I can do this. I've done underwater. I know what I'm doing. Holy shit, that was the stupidest thing I've ever done. I have never, ever in my life been so cold and miserable and damp. And it was just, it was things that I thought I was an expert at, you know, like crazy filming. And it's just, like, we would do a scene like there's a scene where at the beginning where the truck driver and Claire Redfield, Kaya, hit a woman, and it sort of starts the movie, and it's basically from the second game. And it started snowing and then raining and then snowing, so there's a whole takes of it where it's actually completely snow, which we couldn't use, but anyhow, the rain's there. Sometimes the rain machines were freezing, so we had to then stop that, and then Kaya comes out. And she's like it's like Firestarter or something. She's on smoke coming out because she's body heat. It's so cold. And I'm like, what the fuck do I do now? Am I to swear on this? I'm not
yes,
sure.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Yes, please.
But you know, as a director, you're like, they didn't teach you this in film school. She's walking around, plumes of steam coming off her. And I'm like, this looks crazy. And the dog then, you know, you have the dog come out and the dog's like, yeah, fuck this, and goes back into the cab. mean looking dogs were like, yeah, no, no. And we had a couple of them, you know, to try. They were like, you've got to be kidding me. We're not doing this in the rain.
What divas? They're back in their trailer.
I mean, so you see, when you see the movie, like the truck driver's like wrestling with the dog to bring it back to the truck. But actually, he's not. He's wrestling to keep it there. I want to get the fuck out of here. So, yeah.
This is why the sequel is going to be called Welcome to Raccoon Island. And it's going to be set on this tropical island. And it's going to be sunshiny. And it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be a completely new twist on Resident Evil.
It was brutal. Like, yeah, it was like a sort of Herzog movie, but
worth it. No, worth it though. It looks good.
Right. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I got to tell you, man, as a massive fan of these games, I grew up playing them. I just wanted to just say thank you for just sticking to the plot of the games. One of my pet peeves is so many directors, they adapt a video game and then they completely change the whole reason why we love the game to begin with. That's my biggest fear on Metal Gear Solid is like, please just stick to the plot. I'm just sort of curious why you think it's taken this long for us to get the house. Like, it's all I've wanted is to see this house on the big screen.
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? I think really what the key is like 20 years ago when Paul first started, you know, the previous franchise with Mila, that the world was different and people didn't really respect the source material. And gamers didn't necessarily come out to the cinema. And so it was just like, take the IP and go with it, run with it, you know. And they obviously, with the previous franchise, was super successful for that. But the world has changed now. Like, and people have realized that, like, gamers have a power. You know, on Sonic, they got the studio to redesign the damn hedgehog, you know?
Yeah, true.
You know, they have, like, real power, and they come out, and they're passionate. And my big thing, you know, as a gamer myself, I was like, look, let's be nerds. Let's enjoy this. And it got more and more. It was a weird thing where we would feed off the games. Like, I'm very, very apprehensive about ever doing a fan service movie because I just don't think you know what people want, you know, how they react to the game themselves, you know, what period in the life they were playing it and all that kind of stuff. So you can only do what you as a fan would want to do. Mm. But while we were filming, like, posts would come up on Reddit, people would be, you know, stuff would leak out and stuff. And they'd get so super excited about the detail about the police station or the truck or the house, you know, whatever it might be. And that got us, you know, it's so exciting as a director to be like, like, people are loving it. And it would almost, we'd kind of feed off each other. I'd be like, okay.
You're the first director to get excited over leaks.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was like, where the hell were these? I'd see stuff. I'm like, what's that guy? Like, got a better angle than I did. but yeah, I think it's just my direction to the cast and to the crew, you know, DP, production designer, is fall in love with the games. We're not doing a cosplay thing. We don't have to just put the games on screen because we need to do more than that and we need to make it different. But fall in love with it. And if that love comes through on screen, then, you know, people will understand that, fans and non-fans. We just treated it like a novel, you know, as if I was adapting a Stephen King novel. It was like, okay, let's be as faithful as we can whilst being cinematic, you know.
Ooh, now I want to see you adapt Stephen King.
Yeah, please, let's make that happen.
I want to get into the really sexy topic of Foley work, because yours is fantastic.
Amazing.
Yeah, and so I just want to know some of the weird things you might have done to capture your zombie sounds, because they are, there's one in particular that Jake and I were geeking out about before we even got on here, which is unnerving, and I don't want to give it away, but it's just, you know, it's a zombie eating, basically. Right. And at that moment, I was like, I'm so glad I'm in a theater listening to this.
Yeah, the sound was obviously huge on this. I think probably the funniest thing about the whole Foley side of it is when it was first done and we did the first pass, and the guys did just an amazing job on it. We listened to it and it was like, look, this is great, but these zombies sound really sophisticated. Mm. Like, I want to go back to the game. And it really, we really had to work hard to get that, you know, that kind of sound that when you played the first game, you would just hear, and it was so raw and rudimentary that you'd be like, no, you can't use that. That's terrible. That sounds terrible. I'm like, no, that sound, that gets me there. You know, when I hear it, like down a corridor. And it was, a lot of it was weirdly stripping it back and trying with the whole filmmaking process was a big thing, to make everything raw, very retro. Like the style of the movie is very retro, very 70s, but the techniques and the both with sound, with music, with camera, was very, like, the equipment we were using was deliberately, like, I banned drones, no drones on the movie, no CGI camera moves where it would go through a door around, up and down, like just keep everything, like, on the zoom lens, you know, like, I remember with Maxime, my DP, we did a shot at the beginning where it goes from one side of the ward to the other, and of course, it's a long shot, and then the camera moves a little, especially with the equipment we had. Yeah. And he's like, obviously, you know, afterwards, you know, he's Italian. He'd be like, you go in and you'll make it pin sharp, you know, because that's what you do these days. And I was like, yeah, sure we will, Maxine. And then when we get in there, I'm like, no, we're not doing that. Slightly, you know, sort of 70s vibe. So again, with the sound, it was very raw sound, you know. I mean, there's some beautifully sophisticated stuff, but I tried to really kind of keep it kind of stripped to this kind of really 70s vibe to it.
I love that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There is a quick shot in the film that made me scream out loud, because I'm pretty sure it's Easter egg. We see a zombie eating from behind, and then he kind of turns around to see, and I was like, oh, it's the PlayStation cover. It's the cover of the game. And I was just wondering if that was because it looks like the exact zombie. One, can you tell me about that shot? And then I'm assuming there were probably 1,000 Easter eggs I might have missed.
The whole movie is like, the big thing for me was always narrative and human emotion first. But once you had laid that down, then it was like, come on, guys, let's have fun. Let's fill every frame, every corner. You know, I like to shoot widescreen, you know, Carpenter style. And let's put everything. Let's have some fun with all the tiniest details. That was one thing that I knew way back in the beginning had to go. That scene, which is the turnaround zombie, which is the first time you see in the games, you know, 25 years ago when I was a student, that was the first time it's like, oh, it's zombies. And it's like, okay, so we recreated that kind of shot for shot. And the guy did, I remember him doing the sequence, and he just became this, you know, the big thing for us was when we cast the zombies, we didn't use extras. So we used stunt guys if we had to, but always actors. So if we were using stunt guys, they were actors first who had stunt, you know, perform and, you know, had the stunt certificates and stuff. So it was not just people just running around doing, you know, stuff like that. They were proper, you know, really tried to get an emotion to the zombies. And yeah, that was a definite, Easter egg for the movie. But I mean, you could, you know, point at a frame in that movie and there's something like everything from the buildings, you know, built off the blueprints from Capcom gave us the blueprints
wow.
of the computer game. So we built the police station and the mansion to the specific dimensions of the game. You know, like, I was probably like, as a nerd, when do you ever get this opportunity? Like you walk in and you go, well, I won this like the game. And then the person in charge of the money goes, okay. And you're like, oh, I want it exactly like the game. Okay. All right. Well, then I want that like the game. And it's like, okay. You know, just suddenly it's like, all right. Okay. I'm going to, and I would just keep throwing these things out and people would be, you know, Sony and Constantine would just be like, yeah, let's do it. And so it was just, it's like a big kid. It's why you get into doing this shit, you know?
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's very refreshing to hear you say that because, you know, we've seen so many different filmmakers tackling IP that's been around for a little while. Yeah. And you wrote Welcome to Raccoon City as well, too. So I wanted you to just talk about balancing a movie that has to satisfy multiple different audiences. There's people who you know who will know and love the game. There are people yeah. who are going to want to check it out because it's the next Resident Evil film and they've seen the other ones before.
Yeah.
And then there's just total newcomers, you know, who want to go see a horror movie. So how do you even work with satisfying all of those people?
Yeah, it's very tricky. And I think that the thing was is to kind of put that out of your mind and go, look, I'm going to tell this story that I want to tell. I, you know, I as a student, I grew up with the games. You give me the keys here. Hmm. Let me just, you know, trust in that I'm the audience that you want to go and see this movie. Hmm. So I'm gonna put on screen what I would want to go and see. And you know, I would show, you know, so it was really, I think the fans led this kind of drive. Real intense drive to go back to the first two games because it'd just not been done before. So that was great. And that kind of led us down a path. And then my big thing was just like, how are you going to tell this narrative? Like, it's great, like, you know, doing this stuff that fans love, but it's got to be more than the games. You know, because otherwise you might as well play the games. The games are so visual, so cinematic, you know, with the reboots of Resident Evil 2, and you know, Resident Evil 7, how scary those games are. It's like, we've got to offer something different that brings people out to the cinema. So it's to create an emotionally engaging human narrative that's also terrifying, and it's funny and it's terrifying, and humor was a big thing. I felt like I really wanted to get into this movie. And I think as a big Carpenter fan and as big Stephen King fan is I would approach it looking at it through that sort of vision of like, okay, let's do Assault Precinct 13, basically. You know, we've got this ensemble narrative.
Yeah.
Let's set it in a Stephen King style town, this small kind of creepy town that could be, you know, out of any Stephen King novel. And then you've got the game, you know, the real love and passion for the game. And then it created something that was its own thing, that was the game, but was more than, you know. And it was lovely. By far the most, like, happy I've ever been on, like, excited, was Capcom watching the movie. Oh, when they came back, because they are so precise on the tiniest details. And they were, like, the giggly kind of enjoyment. Like, it's weird. Like, I just sort of assumed Capcom, like, as a faceless computer game, you know.
The Umbrella Corporation.
Yeah, exactly. Somehow I kind of thought of them. And, you know, this kind of, like, excitement over the balance of horror and humor and action and that it was the games and it obviously loves the games, but that it was its own thing and the characters were their own thing. It's a balance. And, you know... I'll only see how well we got that balance right come, you know, the 24th of November. But there, yes, you know, everybody's coming at it a different way. I think for me, the thing that overrides everything is when I go to the cinema to see this kind of thing, doesn't matter what IP it's based on, is the one thing I want over anything else is to be scared. Mm. I don't care. Like, get me to the cinema and scare me. I'll run with anything. I'll run with anything. And that was my mantra on this. Like, I have my love of the games and I have my love of cinematic, whatever my cinematic influences are. But above all, whether you're a gamer or a not gamer, you are coming out to this to have the shit scared out of you. And if I don't achieve that, then, you know, then it's on me, you know.
You know, I know that you're trying to get this movie out there and try to tell everyone about this, and it's annoying for me to start looking to the future already, but what have you thought about... Yeah, I know. What have you thought about how you're going to tackle Nemesis?
We have had very active conversations on where the world goes next. It's always something I'm nervous about doing because, you know, like, is it going to curse the, you know... What I loved about doing this is how close we were to the source material. And so my real belief is that if we go forward into a next chapter, we should, again, be super close. We should go to the games, treat the games as like a series of novels. You know, this is the two towers of our Lord of the Rings, whatever our second one is, you know, whatever it should be. And really, you know, really fall in love with what's next. I have a huge soft spot for Resident Evil 4 because it just sort of changed gaming, I think. I love that. There's definitely been talk about Code Veronica, which is a little bit of a bonkers, you know, side game. And then 3, you know, is a really interesting one. There's also Resident Evil 0 on the train. There's a lot there. So there's definitely been active conversations without, you know, sort of forming too much along the line. But I think we're, you know, come Monday, you know, after the weekend, these days, you know, on the Friday, you know, they're like, someone will call you and go, hey, yeah, you're doing the sequel, or the phone just doesn't ring anymore. I'm hoping, like, there's so much there. There's so much we couldn't put in this one that I would love to send to the next one.
Building on that then too, because it sounds so clear from this conversation that you are obviously attention to detail. I have to know, there's a ton of 1990s references sprinkled throughout your script, and I need to know if Raccoon City actually has a Blockbuster Video and what shape it might be in at this point.
You know, I used to work in Blockbuster. I was terrible. Terrible Blockbuster staff member. I imagine it very much has its own Blockbuster somewhere in a strip mall.
Why were you a bad Blockbuster employee? Did you make bad recommendations?
Well, no. Do you know what? I would always be like, I remember the amount of times I would be recommending people Escape from LA, which had just come out.
Right.
You know. And it's not necessarily something you should recommend, like, your average Blockbuster view. Like, somebody's got a new movie and, you know, you've got some woman and child coming in to rent, you know, Cinderella or whatever. And they're like, really? Watch it. Yeah, absolutely. You should watch it. But it was great. It was good times. Good times. £3 an hour.
I miss them. I miss them.
There is a needle drop in this film that actually made me laugh out loud because it was so unexpected. And it, without ruining it, comes a moment where one of our characters is listening to a Walkman of all things, which is fantastic. And this very 90s song comes on that he's listening to. Yeah. It happens to sort of narrate this big action set piece that happens. And without giving away what song it is, because it's so unexpected, I just have to ask, like, where... Like, because obviously you want to choose a song from the era. The film is set in 98.
Yeah.
But where did you land on that song? Like, where what was the conversation where you went, this is the one that's going to narrate this moment?
I knew it before I shot it. I love music hugely. I'm so, you know, I'm so hands on with both the score and the needle drops. It's like it's so important to me in the movie, and I love putting these needle drops in. And I just knew that song was my child. You know, was I was listening to that when I was playing.
It's a good song.
Yeah, it's a great song, isn't it? I remember having to defend it in front of everybody. Like, yeah, but no, it's... And we just played. So we put that song there, and it never changed. It never, we never tried anything else.
It also just made me look at the character differently, because I'm like, oh, this is what he's choosing to listen to when he's kind of hanging out at work.
Yeah, exactly. It just felt like, because I saw that movie through Leon's eyes. Like, when I wrote the script, Leon was the character that enabled me to access the world. Like, he was an outsider coming first day in job, disheveled, hungover carpenter anti-hero. And that was how I got in, and I met Claire. You know, I saw all these people through him, and I wanted that song to sort of just be him, you know, and just that kind of, like, you'd be able to understand this guy. It's sort of like, he's just not cool. He's not.
So wait, does that mean we're not cool if we like that song?
I fear that might be the truth.
Sadly. We would be remiss not to talk about Kaya and her performance here. And of course, you know, we're huge horror fans. We all love the concept of the final girl. And I think she qualifies as one, or at least has a lot of the qualities of them. So I just want to talk about some of the discussions you had with her, and what qualities of a final girl you maybe wanted to have appear in her, and maybe have her stand apart from some of the other ones that are beloved.
Yeah, it was interesting. Kaya was the first person on to the movie. I think very early on, I'm good friends with Alex Arja, who just done Crawl, the alligator movie.
Oh, I love Crawl.
Yeah, it's good. It's a great movie. And I just watched that, and I was like, do you know what? She would be perfect for Resident Evil. So, you know, we spoke, and he was just like, look, that was a tough, tough shoot. You know, it was all water, just grueling shoot. And she just rolled up her sleeves, and she just carried that movie forward. And I was just like, I love the sound of that, you know, because I knew this was going to be brutal. You know, height of the pandemic, you know, minus 10 nights, Ray Machine, COVID, all that kind of stuff. And I needed someone that could, like, lead this through with just being the character in real life. You know, someone, no nonsense, just gets on with it. And I didn't want this kind of LA Hollywood kind of diva-esque person. I needed someone that could just get it. And I remember the first time I spoke to her on Skype, and she, no makeup, glass of wine, and we just sat chatted. And you never normally get that. You normally get, well, I've got one of these here, just here, one of these ring light things. You know,
sure.
There's all that, like, the planning that goes.
That's
into
normally
it.
What you get from us. No makeup, glass of wine.
This is what I'm getting. And yeah, she just pitched up on her sofa with a glass of wine, and we just chatted. And I was just like, yeah, this is a girl that could be Claire. And she really was. She, you know, we talked about it. The big thing was to because Kaya wasn't a gamer. You know, Kaya came in really only knowing the kind of Mila world of Resident Evil. And the big thing was to kind of just re-educate on that, in that this isn't about, you know, this isn't an action movie. There's a lot of action in it, but it's not an action movie. You're not a superhero. You are vulnerable. You can be killed. There is human emotions. There are conflicts here with your brother, with everything that's going on. You are a little crazy in some of your sort of views and conspiracy theories. And, you know, so it was really to try and it was the same with all the cast, is just whenever I would feel them go into, like, super, like, action mode, which is quite easy to slip into actually at times in a movie like this, is to just pull it back and just go, look, I need to feel the fear, and I need to feel like this is real. What is happening here is real, and that you could, you know, there's real danger around the corner at any moment. And so it was really, that was the big thing. But she brought a real, just a human kind of, just sort of loner intensity to it. I liked it. She's kind of a drifter, you know, and I really like that kind of thing. It has a sort of Western vibe to it, this movie, in a if you look at it in a certain way. And she really was the sort of drifter coming into town. So that was kind of fun.
That was very fun. Johannes, we can't thank you enough for taking the time. Your passion for the game has absolutely bled through in this conversation. And so I can't wait for people to get a chance to be able to go see the film coming out on the 24th. So thanks for stopping by, Real Blend, and I hope you enjoyed yourself.
It's lovely chatting to you guys.
Needless to say, we have to thank Sony Pictures for giving us time with Johannes. And of course, thanks to Johannes Roberts for coming on the show to discuss Resident Evil. I have to admit, going into the interview and even going into the film, I'm not a huge Resident Evil guy. I was really glad that Jake was there to join me for the interview because he did play the games a ton growing. And Jake's not a gamer in any way, shape, or form. So it's kind of funny that the Resident Evil, and then there's one other game that Jake is a huge fan of. That I know they're making the movie with Oscar Isaac. So when we get around to that, I'm sure Jake's going to be able to chime in. But what really won me over with Johannes is just his passion for the game. And it really made me appreciate more the type of work that he put into it. The fact that he got the blueprints from Capcom and was able to build out the police department and the mansion, these sets that are integral to the success of the game and bring them to life on screen really did make me appreciate the film more. And I know next time that I check it out, I will be paying more attention to the details that he worked into it because as a newcomer coming through, I just really took it as a zombie film and didn't really realize how much went into the recreations of those sequences. Terrific guest, and his energy absolutely was infectious. So make sure you go check out Resident Evil. Welcome to Raccoon City now that you've had a chance to listen to him talk about it. Coming up on the main show, I can't believe we can say this, but Sir Ridley Scott is going to be our guest. So be sure to check out that show when it drops this coming Friday, Black Friday. Maybe while you're out shopping for friends and family, you can pop it into your device of choice and listen to our latest podcast. If you're watching us here on the YouTube channel, make sure you go down and hit subscribe. Hit your notifications every time a new show or interview from Real Blend comes through. You guys will be the first ones to come on over and listen to it. And then just stay tuned as we go through the rest of the award season. We have got a couple of big interviews that we are bringing to the show. Full reviews, including the full review of Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City on the next episode. And we'll be back here very soon with more Real Blend for you guys.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.